Welcome to this Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to our special Walnut Wednesday report, we'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news here on the show today. And I'll start things off with a look at regional agricultural news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Supplies of purple artichokes are strong out of Coachella, according to Mark Munger, Senior Director of Marketing at Ocean Mist Farms. He says winter peak supplies will last until the end of the month. It is the first season for the crop in this region, and he says they've been working on a proprietary purple artichoke program for several years. The crop has traditionally been planted and harvested only in the springtime in Castroville, but they expanded the program to Coachella this year, providing a winter supply, he says. The quality has been excellent, so they expect the winter purple artichoke program to expand next season in Coachella. The Castroville season traditionally runs from late March to May, but the expansion to Coachella allows Ocean Mist to start harvesting purple artichokes as early as mid-February. With those peak supplies from Coachella lasting through March, they will taper off through the transition back to Castroville. Due to unseasonably cooler weather in Castroville, their spring crop is expected to be 2 to 3 weeks later than normal and will peak in mid-April and run through May. This will create two supply peaks, one in March and a second one in May. This will create some great promotional opportunities, but also challenges in managing customer expectations and promotional timing, he says. He adds that sizes on both green and purple artichokes are peaking on larger packs, with sizes peaking on 12 and 18s. While there is year-round supply of the company's gold standard green artichoke with supplemental product from Baja, Mexico, and Oxnard, California, purple artichokes are currently only grown in Coachella and Castroville. Balancing the two regions is the biggest challenge for Ocean Mist, particularly given how short the season is for purple artichokes, though Ocean Mist hopes to eventually have year-round supplies of them. As for demand, Munger says it's been excellent, with customers taking advantage of peak supplies. Since purple artichokes are very seasonal, they've seen an uptick in both interest and sales with their expanded winter program. They are still creating awareness of their purple artichoke program and expect demand to continue to increase as more retailers and consumers discover the colorful new variety. As for consumption, he says in general, there's been a steady increase in artichoke consumption. They have had very robust and targeted marketing to introduce artichokes to new users and take out the mystery of the potentially daunting vegetable, he says. Feedback from customers about the flavor and eating experience from purple artichokes has been excellent, which is a great indicator that consumption will continue to grow. As for pricing, it's good on both colors of artichokes going into the winter peak through the proprietary purple artichokes, though the proprietary purple artichokes command more of a premium price. For Northern California farmers, everything from water to fertilizer to labor has gotten significantly more expensive over the last several years. Operation costs have gone up, labor costs have gone up, everything has gone up, but commodity prices to the growers have not, that according to Devin Bauer, who owns an organic almond and pistachio farm. Bauer, like many other farmers, said adapting to challenges is just part of life as a grower, but that adaptability gets squeezed by things like water restrictions and nationwide inflation. For those farms that can afford the upfront investment, smart technology can help save some cash in the field. At the Colusa Farm Show, agriculture vendors from all over the country gathered together to show off the latest and greatest innovations. Programmable and remote-controlled drone tractors have seen a rise in popularity over the past 5 years. Opportunities like this really give the power back to the farmer when you have your own equipment and your own time and really can manage it as easily as you could a smartphone. That according to Kurt George, who is the Vice President of Business Development for Hylio, a Texas-based company specializing in what it calls agro drones. Hylio's drones can take care of spraying, watering, and even seeding with better precision than traditional farm equipment, all without making an impression on the land below. The company estimates that its drones use 1/10 of the water of a traditional irrigation system. Hylio's agro drone first came into the market about 5 years ago. George says it's taken some time, but his company's product is gaining popularity in California. He himself is a rice farmer in Colusa County. California farmers are definitely at a tipping point, and he thinks the combination of workforce reduction with COVID and the water reduction through the latest drought, that's what's tipped people over the edge. Other vendors were showing off fully autonomous farming vehicles and smart sprayers trained to target only the green chlorophyll in plant leaves. Robert Meyer of Meyer Distributing said those targeted sprayers can cut down on chemical use by 50% after one use, saving farmers supplies and money while limiting the number of chemicals in surrounding water systems and the crops themselves. These innovations have long-term cost-saving benefits, but upfront costs can range from $1,500 to $300,000 for a single unit. Almond grower Devin Bauer said for small and medium-sized farms like his, those prices can be out of reach. Meanwhile, larger corporate operations have been taking advantage of this smart farming equipment for several years. Jared Enos, a walnut grower representative with Carrier Farms, says that $1 million loss to these huge farms is nothing, as these guys can adapt to new technologies pretty easily. As more farms invest and a technology improves and becomes easier to produce, it may eventually become more affordable to those mid-size and growing businesses. And as farms in the West adapt to climate change and the potential for more crippling droughts in the decades to come, it might also become more necessary. Autonomous farming is definitely where the ag industry is headed, according to George. The 2023 California Date Palm Workshop, an event that presents data and research on the state of the date crop in California, was held recently in Indio. The annual event was held for the first time at the Coachella Valley History Museum. Museum Supervisor V. Manuel Perez was among the guest speakers. He said the date crop has a long and important legacy in California, especially the Coachella Valley, which leads the country in date production. He said date growing is at the origin of Riverside County Fair and National Date Festival, which is 75 years old and continues to sustain the economy, families, and the community. He said he was excited that the California Date Palm Workshop was being held at the Coachella Valley Museum, home to the Date Museum. He said giving everyone involved in the date industry and community access to the latest research and data on this important product grown in the region. The 2023 California Date Palm Workshop was hosted by the University of California in partnership with the California Date Commission. California Farm Bureau's Capital Ag Conference is coming up March 27th through the 29th. It will take place in Sacramento and will be held at the Hilton Sacramento Arden West. Join a grassroots process with the California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansson and special guest speakers. The event will also feature Commodity Advisory Committee meetings. For more information, visit the California Farm Bureau Federation's website or Facebook page. A new weekly farmers market has opened in Cardiff, creating more opportunities for people to shop locally as farmers, vendors, and crafters sell their items. The new farmers market features more than 70 vendors that sell locally grown fruits, vegetables, food vendors, locally made crafts, live music, and more. The farmers market will be open every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at MiraCosta's campus in Cardiff.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante. Imagination, innovation, science in action.
There haven't been many new advancements on the side of weed management for walnuts, but with this wet winter growers have been having, there's sure to be an abundance of sprouting weeds in orchards. UCCE weed specialist Brad Hansen explained protocols at the 2023 California Walnut Conference earlier this year, noting to be careful with certain chemicals that are becoming subject to multiple resistance.
There is somewhat of an increase in multiple resistance, and Jim talked about this in the context of mancozeb and copper, but we've got plenty of glyphosate resistance already. We're starting to find, you know, cases here and there where there's glyphosate and something else, paraquat resistant, in a few cases, glufosinate resistance. So we've already selected for the glyphosate biotype and then are selecting other mechanisms of resistance on top of that. So far, this has been primarily a ryegrass issue. That's at least the biggest, well, maybe perhaps the most widely studied, but also the most area covered. But I had a couple of students work on hairy fleabane and horseweed as well, paraquat resistance, glyphosate resistance, a couple of cases of glufosinate resistance, although I haven't really seen that as a major issue in the field. But the point here is you know, we can get resistance to other modes of action too. So I took a picture of Jim's rule slide. I'm going to swipe that and, you know, co-opt that. But I think all of those things that he talked about for, you know, pathogen management also apply here. You know, rotating chemistries and you know, using appropriate rates and educating yourself about mechanisms of action.
Taking multiple resistance into account, it's still important to use different chemistries when controlling weeds in the orchard. And Hansen said this strategy that walnut growers in the ag industry has adopted is a reason why the industry has actually done a pretty good job managing resistance in recent years. However, Hansen is still worried about specific chemicals seeing future resistance.
I'm much less worried about paraquat resistance because I think that may be a regulatory solution to that, but just because it's going to be more difficult to use. But glufosinate is one I am actually really worried about because we use a lot of glufosinate, and that became really apparent over the last couple of years because of supply chain issues with glyphosate and glufosinate. So certainly be really cognizant of weeds that are, you know, not responding to glufosinate. That could actually be resistant. So be aware of that. The summer grass issues, I mentioned specifically jungle rice, but I think feather finger grass is one we see up here in the southern parts of the state, windmill grass several others are spangle top, are ones that I'm concerned about, primarily because they're emerging in the summertime, you know, late spring and summer, when we're really very reliant on our post-emergent materials. So if they're already resistant to glyphosate, and we've got really ACCase inhibitors, primarily clethodim, that we're going to be using, I see a lot more selection pressure for ACCase or group one inhibitor resistance. So be cognizant of that as well. You know, the post-emergent materials tend to be much more selective for resistance, whether they're the graminicides like clethodim or glyphosate or glufosinate or paraquat. Just be well aware of that. So far, we've not seen major issues with resistance to the PPO chemistries. That's the flumioxazins, the saflufenacils, carfentrazones, that type of thing. ALS inhibitor resistance is huge in the world. It's really not a very big issue in tree crops because we don't depend on that chemistry as much for the heavy lifting. But it's out there. We've seen some populations of ryegrass resistant to the group 2 herbicides like panoxalum, rimsulfuron, and so forth.
Something Hansen advised walnut growers to employ in their weed management plans is sweeping debris off the ground to increase the efficacy of an application, ensuring the chemical doesn't get caught up on fallen leaf surfaces.
Particularly in walnuts, grapes, pears, you know, some of the crops that have more persistent leaf material, if you've got a lot of debris out there, blowing or sweeping those berms will definitely improve your pre-emergent herbicide programs. These herbicides work by getting into the top quarter inch or so of soil. If you're spraying leaves that then blow away, or, you know, leaves that, you know, cause the herbicide to run off, you know, shed off, you're going to get kind of chinks in your armor, so to speak. There's going to be holes in that coverage. So I didn't do this work, but a colleague of mine did this work in grapes, John Roncaroni. He was seeing somewhere between 15 and 30% improvement in herbicide performance where he swept the berms in that grape because of that better coverage and less kind of off-site movement of those treated leaves later in the season. So, you know, there's a cost to that from in terms of blowing or sweeping, but I think you may see either getting out early enough before significant leaf fall, or you know blowing or sweeping those berms can pay dividends.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
In national agricultural news today, National Land Realty, a real estate and brokerage company specializing in farm, ranch, country homes, timber, recreational, and commercial development properties, has released its third annual Land Real Estate Agent and Broker Survey. Among the key findings are that while 2022 was a year with many properties appreciating, many agents see 2023 becoming a year of stabilization and limited depreciation, yet only a very small number of agents foresee a a depreciation of more than 5%. Agents are looking forward to 2023 being another busy year where they expect buyers to make use of opportunities offered by a limited price correction. They remain positive about their business prospects this year, with almost two-thirds either somewhat or very optimistic. The survey showed there was a notable land appreciation in the rural land real estate sector in 2022, with almost two-thirds of agents seeing a slight to often significant increase in land values, with recreational farmland and residential land being the standout types. What is significant is that while the agents are seeing a positive business outlook in 2023, they are nonetheless expecting a softening of land appreciation, with almost a third of them not expecting any appreciation at all. Last year, brokers saw recreational land increase the most, followed by farmland. Residential came in third. Timberland and ranchland rounded out the top five. The American Farm Bureau Federation estimates 2022 crop losses due to weather and climate change at more than $21.4 billion. The AFBF Market Intel analysis shows in 2022, 18 weather and climate disasters, each with damages exceeding $1 billion, struck the United States. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reported that 2022 surpassed 2021 as the third costliest disaster year event in history, with an estimated $165 billion and total economic losses. In 2022, Texas suffered the most significant hit, with over $6.4 billion in incurred losses, primarily made up of $2.9 billion in damages to cotton. More than half of the agricultural losses were effectively protected under existing risk management programs, with the remainder highlighting the importance of inclusive protections for growers of all crops in all regions of the nation. AFBF crop loss estimates do not include infrastructure damage, livestock losses, horticulture crop losses, or timber losses associated with these selected weather events. Top issues for the National Farmers Union focus on fairness for farmers. National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue, during the organization's annual convention recently in San Francisco, explains more.
It's hard to talk about any of the issues confronting agriculture. Now, talking about the Farmers Union's Fairness for Farmers campaign, a campaign that is really trying to lift up and show folks exactly what the kind of the monopolization of agriculture is facing. This is everything from right to repair to making sure that we have better cattle markets, to make sure that farmers are getting fair prices, that there's truth in labeling. Part of this, of course, is also with an eye toward the next farm bill.
The good news is, LaRue says, many in Washington, D.C. are listening.
The nice thing about these issues is that when you explain them, they're easily understood. And everything from consumers to Republicans and Democrats understand the challenges here. And so we do think that there are real opportunities to make some progress.
That all comes, as LaRue says, NFU membership is increasing.
I think our message is getting out there, right? When you speak truth to a lot of these challenges that family farmers and ranchers are facing these days, and just all of the pressure against them, trying to do the right thing, trying to make agriculture much more fair for everyone. No guarantees, of course, for anybody, but at least a fair shake. That's what everybody wants. And so I think that message that Farmers Union delivers out there consistently and the progress that we're making is getting some attraction.
National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue. What will farmers see as far as net income this year? USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has some expert answers to that question in this report.
Every year, the U.S. Department of Agriculture holds an Outlook Forum, partially geared to look at what the new year is likely to bring to the folks who produce our food and to food shoppers. And we've just finished a year in which farmers as a whole earned record net incomes, despite a huge run-up in prices for things like fuel and fertilizers. Meanwhile, retail food prices rose at a rate not seen in over 40 years. So what are the experts predicting for 2023?
All the prices that we're looking at for the major crop commodities down year over year.
All regions of the country are expected to see lower cash receipts and higher production expenses.
But we'll have income that is better than the average.
Food at home prices will continue to increase.
And so those were the basic themes fleshed out by several experts, chief among them, USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer. He's predicting a drop in farm exports this year, somewhat lower prices for most crops. So a reasonable question might still be the nation's farm sector. Will it be able to somehow generate a third straight year of record net income in 2023? Short answer,
no.
but the expectation is it will still be an above average year.
He expects net cash farm income this year to be $150.5 billion. That would be down almost 23% from last year's record. Reasons?
Commodity prices falling, input prices rising but slower, government payments pulling back.
Meyer says, of course, when you boil it down,
for a producer, what's going to matter here is how do your input prices follow those output prices down? That's going to be key.
We are forecasting that fertilizer and feed expenses will decline in 2023, yet they will remain high.
And USDA economist Carrie Litkowski says expenses for most everything else are expected to increase, including
interest expenses. They are expected to see the largest increase,
up about 22% from last year.
And this reflects expectations of higher interest rates and debt levels in 2023.
She says we haven't talked much about farm debt in recent years, but it could be more of a topic this year. She said, in general, because of rising land values, the value of farm equity is going to rise this year by 2%, but
debt is forecast to increase 3%.
Uh-oh, and she said for all of 2023,
we're expecting that the rate of growth for debt will be greater than the growth in assets. So after 2 years of improving the solvency numbers, they're expected to worsen slightly in 2023.
Not a huge problem, but she says something to watch. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.